Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, we've been on a big equipment kick here the last couple of episodes. This one, we're going to finish it up, at least for now, because you can talk about equipment forever. I am John Lopez. That is Captain Scott Null. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Hope you are frying some turkeys, baking some turkeys, and more important, spending some time with some family, and maybe even more important, did I say that? Going fishing this weekend. Got to have your priorities right. Wow, last Thanksgiving, last year. I'll get to that story in a second, but yeah, this is the Bite Me Podcast. John Lopez, Captain Scott Null. I am at Lopez on Sports on Twitter, Lopez on Sports on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook with my name, Captain Scott Null, and Captain Scott Null Fishing, is it?
That's just Captain Scott.
Captain Scott Null for his for your guide service as well. And this dude is the best, man. I'm telling you, trust me on that. We're talking Texas inshore, Texas offshore insight. Last week we told you about a couple of tips that we hoped would work after that the big cold front we had. And I hope they did. But this week, what are we going to talk about? We got on this tangent of rods and the right strength and flexibility, and it really took up like a good quarter of the podcast. So let's go on with some equipment today. We're going to finish that discussion. We're going to talk about lines, strengths, leaders, etc. I want to talk about some absolute musts right now in the fall and the winter, especially when weather turns nasty. How do you deal with a front when you're trying to catch some fish? Is it before? Is it after? What's what else might be involved? People talk about the moon all the time. I see the moon, and the moon sees fish, I guess. I don't know. We'll talk about that. Surf fishing. Man, I cut my teeth on surf fishing with my dad way back in the day. I've got a couple of ideas. I know Captain Scott does. It's not just potluck. It's not. I mean, it can be. You can just pull up to your favorite spot off of an access road to the beachfront and catch fish. But I think there's a couple things you can look for as well. How you doing this week, Captain?
Doing good.
Everything. You got family in for the holidays?
And kids and grandkids, and everybody's coming down to the ranch and hanging out.
And just so people know, I actually got to know you via you recommending your daughter for an internship back in the day with us at Sports Radio 610, my other job. I think you texted us. Or emailed me.
Yeah, I think I emailed you about mm-hmm. it.
And said, hey, my daughter's in communications and yep. looking for an internship. And I said, yeah, man, why not? And she did a great job, and she's kicking butt right now selling new homes, right?
She sells custom homes.
Custom homes. Yep. And your other daughter is obviously going to be with you this week as well.
Yep. She teaches math mm-hmm. at Pearland High School.
Oh, good deal. So, you and I have gone back a little bit, and certainly, the fishing expertise is there. You've been doing it for so long. I've been doing it my whole life as well. So let's start today with where we finished episode 10. This is episode 11. Of course, you can reach us through all those social media platforms and Facebook pages and web pages. But we're going to paste we post this this podcast and ask us some more questions. One of them was about equipment. All right, we ended up with rod discussion, and we can talk about that a lot.
Yeah, we were going to do rods and reels and hooks and all kind of stuff, and we just got on rods.
So, but we're not even done with that yet, because after the podcast, you and I talked about, we didn't even tell them about how to handle these rods, how to travel with them, what's your, the care for them, etc. But you feel pretty strongly about a couple things in particular.
Well, you're spending a lot of money on a good rod. Mm-hmm. Some of them you can spend a heck of a lot of money on. And then you see people just mistreating them. Yeah. Yeah, I've been in the rod business off and on. I've sold rods for different companies as a sales rep. Mm-hmm. Loomis, TFO, American Rodsmiths. Been with all of them at one point or another. Mm-hmm. And I know people at all these different ones. And that's one of the things behind the scenes. We all know each other. And we all get along.
Yeah.
And you may fight in public. Yeah,
your rod's better than their rod.
About the rods, yeah. But behind the scenes, pretty much everybody gets along. There's a few exceptions, I guess. Mm-hmm. But we'll all get talking about it, and it drives everybody in the rod business crazy how people treat rods. Mm-hmm. Throwing them in the bed of the truck on the way home, just chunk them in there. Leave them in a rod holder with a popping cork and a weight attached. Mm-hmm. And you see it going down the freeway all the time. That weight is banging into the base of that rod.
It's bending the rod, banging the rod.
The rod's bending and it's banging. You see people with a hook on one of the eyes, on the foot.
That's a pet peeve of mine.
On the foot of an eye, and the rod tip is bent double over, and they've got braid on there. I mean, it just drives me nuts to see all that. And you spent that money on that rod, just spend a little bit of time to take care of it.
And your bigger point here is that's going to ruin the rod.
Oh, it's going to ruin the rod. People talk about it all the time where, hey, man, I don't know what happened on this rod. I was just setting a hook on this fish, and it just broke. I set the hook on this redfish. I've been fishing this thing for 3 years and never had a problem.
Yeah.
Well, it's something you did to the rod. It's not the rod. Manufacturer defects in rod blanks are real rare, really, really rare.
And they've in the rod, even more rare.
Yeah, they've got that system figured out. Mm-hmm. I mean, they know what they're doing building those things. Generally speaking, it's where you bruise that rod. At some point in time, whether it was struck against the side of the boat when you're casting and two rods end up banging together, it may not break the rod right then, but it puts a bruise on that.
And on the
graphite.
The graphite and whatever else it's made of, yeah.
And with that bruise, now it's weakened the fibers in that one point of the rod. Now every time you flex that rod, every time you cast, if it's towards the tip, or every time you're fighting a fish, if it's towards the butt, it flexes. And the more it flexes, the more it breaks those little fibers.
And it goes to the weakest spot on the rod.
And it's always going to go to the weakest spot. Mm-hmm. And then eventually the rod's going to fail.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be upset and be mad at the manufacturer and all that.
No, I've had it. I've had it where I've cast one time and the rod breaks. That's a manufacturer. Yeah,
it's either a manufacturer's defect or something happened to it in shipping or at the store.
Yeah.
You see people getting it up there and they're shaking the rod tip like we've talked about. that tells you zero about the flexibility of a rod. It tells you nothing about a rod. But we all do it. Everybody does. You can't help it.
You get a new rod or one that you think about buying, you start flicking it.
Yeah, you shake it. But that tells you nothing about a rod.
It tells me, by God.
It doesn't tell you a thing. But at some point, somebody was flipping that rod around in the store and then they clacked it against a rod rack or something. And, that's where rods break.
Well, and so what I do now, I leave a lot of the rods on the boat because I keep my boat down there and it's covered and all that. That to me, that's fine. But if you're traveling with a rod, don't leave anything exposed. When you're pulling, if you leave it in the rod holder,
not going long distance. I mean, in Port O'Connor, I'm not going very far.
Yeah, you can put them in the back of your truck.
I'll have them on the rod holders.
Yeah,
but I take the time to make sure that the lures
aren't not bent over,
aren't to a spot where they're going to bang into the blank.
And by the way, I mentioned this earlier, don't ever hook it. I guess sometimes if you have to, whatever, but try not to ever hook your lure or your hook on the eye or the foot of the eye.
Right.
There's a little holder down there that's there for a reason.
Most of the time, either that or there's a spot on your reel that'll hold a hook pretty well.
That's just stress.
And if you do, have to put it on an eye, put it on the foot.
Yeah.
Don't put it on the actual eye ring.
Because a lot of times they're lined with fiberglass or something.
It's ceramic most
ceramic,
of the time.
Ceramic, yeah.
Some type of a ceramic.
And that's going to cause a little flaw.
It's going to chip it a little bit, and that's going to eat your line every time you cast.
And then you're going to say, man, why did I lose that fish?
Something else, old-time tip, back when ceramic eyes were everything, and they were a weaker ceramic, and they cracked a lot. We'd take old pantyhose. I don't even know if you can find pantyhose.
Yeah, I don't know. Nobody uses them.
But we used to take our take the wife's pantyhose and run that through there, an old pair, and run it through your eyes, and it would snag if there was
a
little spot on your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it was because you were breaking a line pretty regular, and you couldn't figure out why.
That's
why. Do the pantyhose check.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't know if you can even buy pantyhose anymore.
Nothing like a good pantyhose check in my book.
Here's totally different meaning.
here's the other part about rods, and it ties in with the other equipment that we're going to talk about here real quick. Is I never leave anything exposed. I'm not a big, you know, some guys get by the big rod sleeve and all that. That's fine. That's good. You're taking care of your rod. I've never been. Mm-hmm. I just take care of them inside my truck mm-hmm. or inside my boat underneath the rod rack where they're not getting dirt, grime, whatever's blowing in the wind. You know, a lot of times, even if you have it in the back of your truck, you don't think you're driving recklessly. It's scratching and bouncing, and the reels start getting all kinds of junk, yeah. all kinds of junk in them. It's just like the road grime you feel on the front end of your truck or your car. That's getting in your reel, and that's the worst thing you can have.
Well, that dust in the bed mm-hmm. of your truck is swirling.
Yeah.
There's a little tsunamis going on.
little
tornadoes
yeah.
and stuff. They're all going on back there in the back end of the truck. And all that's going into every crack and crevice on that reel.
Mm-hmm. And then you're wondering, man, it's not working like it used to. Well, that might be a you problem. So that's something. Never put them outdoors. Don't leave them exposed to the elements.
We're hard enough on them with just fishing.
Oh, we're guys. You know, that's the thing. We're going to be rough on our equipment anyway. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. I got reels with little scuff marks on them. I mean, everybody does.
Yep.
But just try to limit that as much as you can. I mean, guys are just like that. You throw them around a little bit. All right. Before we get to some of the other topics that we talked about, let's wrap up a little bit here. And again, we're going to come back to this equipment topic multiple times, I'm sure. Braid, mono, line strength generally for different types of fishing on the Texas Gulf Coast. Let's start with braid versus mono. When are you using which, or do you just use one?
I just use braid. I take it back. I've got some mono on a couple of big rods.
Spinning reels?
No, big rods that...
for offshore. Yeah.
Yeah, trolling rods. Because when a fish hits on a trolled lure, mm-hmm. you want that little extra stretch.
Yeah.
That the monofilament gives you,
mm-hmm.
Just as a shock absorber more. But no, as far as in the bays, sight casting, throwing lures, it's hard to beat braid.
It's all I throw.
Yeah.
The
feel of it is just
casting ability.
Yeah. And it's come a long ways over the last 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When it first came out, I went to it and then I got off. Hated it.
I quit it.
Oh,
because
yeah,
you get so many backlashes and tangles and knots.
And I went back to my old Trilene,
mm-hmm.
12-pound Trilene.
I used the same thing.
Yeah. And I went back to that.
I used 12-pound Trilene, that little red packet.
Yep. The XL.
Yeah, the XL.
Trilene XL.
I used that for years and years and years. Yep. Everybody's raving about braid. I went to braid, tried it for about a year. I'm like, this is garbage.
I didn't even give it a year. I gave it like three trips. Hated that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's come so far. Once you get used to it and the improvements that they've made over the years,
mm-hmm.
making tighter weaves, more fibers. There's a lot of technical stuff that goes.
Even when I get backlash, I don't get that knot hardly ever.
No.
That's impossible to get out
right.
and you get to start over.
You don't have customers.
That's true. You do. I don't. That's CaptainScottandAll.com, by the way. No.
I lose a lot of braid.
Mm-hmm. But it's still better.
Oh, yeah. It's way better.
To me, braided line is just, and I don't know, I'm trying to think, do I use mono for anything other than a leader? I don't think I do. I don't go offshore very much for like you do.
And that's probably even going to change the next time I set up a new set of reels. Finn's braid.
Mm-hmm.
He has one that's a shock absorbing braid.
Right.
And it does have some stretch to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably what I'm going to go to.
It's
like a 65 pound shock absorbing braid.
And in bays, braid, you don't want that stretch.
No, I want to feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to feel it all.
Yeah.
And you want it when you set the hook, you're setting the hook.
You get one of those nice high modulus graphite rods
mm-hmm.
and a jig head and braid, and I can tell you what kind of bottom you're fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can feel it.
Just by the feel.
You can feel the mud. You can mm-hmm. feel the grass. You can feel everything.
Mm-hmm.
So when a fish eats it, you can really feel it.
To me, it's just, it's progress.
Yeah.
Why use, you know, a percolator when you can have a Keurig? You know, although it took me a while to get rid of my percolator just because I'm old school. But yeah, you know, it's easier. It's more efficient. It's better. You cast longer. You feel the bite better. What's the downside? You know, the downside was it used to tangle up real easy. It doesn't happen anymore.
It was a bird's nest waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But that's gone away.
When you're fishing, I got into a discussion with one of my buddies recently when I was fishing with him. I do things a little different, I know, on some fronts. When do you use leader? When do you tie right onto the line? When do you use, maybe some guys that like to use some sort of a clip or, you know, something on the end of the line? What is your theory?
I'm not a clip guy.
I'm not either. One. I'm not either.
I just don't trust them. Mm-hmm. And I can tie a knot as quick as I can mess with one of those clips.
Yeah.
Leaders up there in the mud hole where you fish. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't worry about it.
I never do. I'm glad you said that.
I tie straight to the braid and just go with it.
That's what I do.
But, you know, down where I am where you got some clearer water, then I'm going to go with a leader of some type. Mm-hmm. Tarpon fishing, of course, I go with a fairly long leader.
Right.
And fairly heavy. I like fluorocarbon for all of that. Mm-hmm. Very, very seldom I just use mono, even for leaders. Now, I got kids on the boat, and we're going to do a bait fishing trip at the jetties.
Sure.
We're going to lose some stuff. I'll go ahead and put some mono on then, because I don't want to break off my expensive fluorocarbon on rocks all day.
Right.
But if I'm throwing lures at fish, targeted
you're
fish.
You're fishing, or you're fishing with customers?
Right. Now I get customers. It's going to be fluorocarbon. Generally 16, 20 pound.
How long do you usually use?
Probably 18 to 20 inches.
That's about what I use.
That's about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't go crazy with it. Now on the tarpon, I may be 6, 7, 8 foot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
really?
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I've had a problem with tarpon when they jump and they flip around and all that. They can break braid
with their bodies.
With their bodies than they can breaking mono.
Makes sense.
Or with the fluorocarbon. Mm-hmm. And I'm using 60 or 80 pound fluorocarbon, depending on the size of fish that we're seeing. So that can take some abuse. Mm-hmm. And when those fish jump and they roll up on that line, shorter leaders, we break them off.
I know a lot of guys, even where I fish, upper coast, they won't fish without some type of leader. I tie right onto the braid off the bottom. Generally everything I throw except the popping cork, I'll use I say the arm length, so that's about 28 inches or 30 inches or so of leader on the underneath the cork. But that's about the only time. There's no right answer here per se.
No, I honestly think we could get away with tying straight to the to the braid down even where I'm at in clearer water. But it makes me feel a little better to have a little bit of a leader on there.
Yeah.
And I think
for visual more than anything.
In really, really shallow, clear water, chasing reds and the spooky reds, I think maybe it does make a little difference.
Now let's talk about your fly fish. We have some fly fishermen listening. How do you approach it?
I've got a tapered leader. Generally I'm gonna go with a 16 pound tapered leader, and I might go 12 if the water's real clear, it's real calm. There's not a lot of wind movement.
And when you say tapered, it's actually tapered.
The butt of it is probably about the size of a 30 or 40 pound line, and then it tapers down.
That's for casting.
Right, it's for casting. With a fly rod, you're casting the line, you're not casting the fly or the lure. And so you've got to transfer that energy, and that's how it transfers the energy.
That's where the weight comes from.
It's thicker and heavier at the base, and then it rolls out, and it makes that nice little, it's supposed to.
Right.
Ideally. Roll out onto the water and land softly.
Ideally.
It doesn't always happen, but in a river runs through it, it does. But out on the actual water, it's more, it happens. It depends on the caster.
Yeah.
The right caster can make it work.
Right.
But your average guy's not doing it so much.
So I guess it comes back down to, for our listeners here, what you're really comfortable with, what you find success with. And you just talked about where I fish, a little darker water, not necessarily, you can see
Galveston.
Your feet. Yeah. If you're comfortable with a leader, throw a leader. But you don't have to, is my point. I feel more comfortable because, like you, if I'm jacking with a clip or something and tying a leader onto the other part, I'm like, that's just wasted motion.
And a lot of people, too, are really, they're worried about that knot between the leader.
That it's visual or whatever.
Now just the strength of it and their ability to tie a knot.
Oh, yeah.
braid to mono or braid to fluorocarbon. Mm-hmm. And that used to be a big deal. I used a uni to uni for years, and sometimes it worked, sometimes I didn't feel good about it. And I started using one now. It's called an FG knot. You can look it up online.
So you tie line onto line, nothing in between.
Right. It's line to line. Mm-hmm. And that way it goes through the eyes.
Because a lot of guys will use something in between.
Yeah, they'll use a swivel in between. Every time you reel up, what does it do? Mm-hmm. It hits that tip over and over and over again, and eventually it's going to mess that tip up.
Yeah, good point.
It's going to scratch it. It's going to...
A G2 knot?
FG knot.
FG knot.
You look up FG knot. There's videos online of how to tie it and practice it in controlled situations, because it's a little complicated at first. But once you get it down, I can tie it on the boat now without any problem. At first, you know, I was a little shaky about that. I tie on extra long leaders, you know, the night
just
before.
Just in case.
So that as we change lures throughout the day, I wouldn't have to tie a new one. But now I've got no problem with it at all. I knock it out really quick on a boat.
I'll have to look at it. I haven't seen that
one
myself.
It's a good knot. I haven't had a failure with it. Okay. So that's big for me. That's even with tarpon. We've been using it. I've been... Yeah, you know, 40-pound
braid. You can
lose
tarpon, but it's not going to be the line.
Yeah, 40-pound braid and 80-pound leader is not an easy knot to tie.
Right.
And the FG knot's been doing really well with it.
One more thing on line strength before we move on to boat ramp etiquette and some of the musts for the fall and the winter weather when it turns nasty. Line strength you can increase with braid, too. And I meant to say that earlier. And that because it's so thin, it's so light. Generally, we were talking about... 12-pound test on trilene.
Yeah,
I throw 25. You know, on my braid, and it's half the size of that old trilene.
Yeah, I mean, you could throw the even smaller on braid, but then when you do get a backlash, and let's be honest,
it's harder.
Going to get a backlash at some point.
Yeah,
it's harder to work it.
I get something just about on every trip.
Yeah, because
you're the wind. And
of course. It happens. It doesn't happen to me, but it happens to everybody else.
You're the one. You're the one.
But, I mean, you could get away with throwing 10-pound braid because it's so daggum strong.
Right.
Even what they rate them at, their brake strength is probably twice what they rate them.
Yeah.
The biggest problem is the diameter. You know, once you get down to the 20-pound line in braid is somewhat equivalent to about 6-pound line in mono.
So you're about like me, you throw 25, 30?
I throw 30. On bait casters, I generally throw 30. On the spinning rods for the customers, I usually have 20.
Yeah.
I've got some 40 on some bigger rods. Ones that I throw lures to bulls, bull reds or tarpon even on the beachfront. 40 pounds. Generally, it'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it'll do it. There's no doubt about that. All right, here we are, holiday weekend. Now, it's not Labor Day or Memorial Day, but a lot of guys are going to, you know, finish their Thanksgiving dinner and maybe head down, you know, Saturday or Friday to go fishing. The boat ramp might be a little busy. We talk about boat ramp etiquette. And I know a lot of guys think that, it's not me. You know, I know there's a lot of problems, at the boat ramp, but I'm not it.
Mm-hmm.
You probably have been it at some point.
At some point.
There are certain things when you get to the boat ramp. I'll toss it to you first here because I know you brought this up, and it's a really good topic because it just starts your day out so much better when you're doing things the right way, and it helps other guys too.
Right. Well, it's time of year makes a difference. Mm-hmm. If you're going on a weekday in the wintertime,
do whatever you want to do,
but nobody's there. If you're launching at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning on a summer day, most everybody, all the serious guys, have gotten out there already.
Right.
You can kind of take your time. And that's one of the things I'd like to point out. If you know you suck at it,
oh yeah, and you do,
and people know,
right?
You know that
what you can do.
And if I can't get my boat off the trailer successfully within a couple of minutes, then I know that I suck at this, and I can watch other people and see how they're doing it, and they're a lot quicker than I am. Okay, just wait.
Let them go.
Just wait. Don't go at the busiest times because all you're going to do is frustrate everybody
and yourself.
You're going to frustrate yourself. or the worst is the husband-wife deals when I see those going
on. See that all the time.
Then there's going to be is a yelling match or something going to go on with that. So basically, just wait. Just wait and do it. Do it when it's not as busy and you have your time that you can take your time and do it the way that you need to do it.
And even if you are kind of hell-bent to go because you want to catch fish, you know, when you get out there early or when it's happening, when you pull into the area of the ramp, don't go to the ramp immediately. Stop. A lot of times I'll unhook the safety chain, so it's just easy to take the boat off of the thing after I lower it or whatever. But sometimes to be safe, you might want to leave the safety chain and take the strap off. You know what I mean? Whatever you're comfortable with. Do the plug.
Even before you get there.
Though, yeah.
Before you get to the ramp, one of the things that I've had to do it in the past, mm-hmm. I had a motor that just was cold in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And you know your boat. That motor just didn't want to start in the mornings first thing, especially if it was a little cool out.
Yeah. Crank it.
Colder it got, the crankier it mm-hmm. got. So I would crank it up before I left the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably irritated some neighbors when I lived in the neighborhood, but I would just bump it
mm-hmm.
two or three times and make sure that it started.
Right.
I still do that to this day. I don't have a motor like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the night before, or maybe in the morning right before I head out.
Right.
Of course, I live out on 80 acres now with no neighbors.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter. I could run it.
Right.
But start your motor. Make mm-hmm. sure it's going to start. The worst thing in the world is to back down that ramp, get your boat off the trailer, and then
all of a sudden you're
stuck click. Without yeah. a motor that won't start.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've blocked the whole ramp for everybody else. Loading your stuff, have your rods and reels and all that stuff in there, your wading gear,
mm-hmm.
everything that you want out of your truck in your boat, go ahead and put it in there.
Yeah.
Make sure you got your plugs in. Yeah. You see, I see that.
We've all done
it
that.
It happens all the time. Yeah. People leave their plugs out. It happens. But one of the biggest ones for me that I see day after day that's very, very simple to take care of
mm-hmm.
is turn your headlights off.
Yeah.
I'm just still amazed by the number of people who leave their headlights on when they're backing down the ramp.
Mm-hmm.
And especially on the ramps where you've got 2, 3, 4 lanes. I use Charlie's a lot down in Port O'Connor.
Mm-hmm.
I use the Fishing Center. Fishing Center's got 4 lanes. You get 2 trucks over there and you're going to back down between those 2 trucks and they both got their headlights on. You can't see anything.
You can't see.
Backing up.
Yeah.
And I don't care how good you are at backing up.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see anything.
Especially, sometimes when your rear view mirrors and your back window, it gets condensation on them in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you wipe that stuff before you get to the ramp. That's one yep. of my pet peeves, before you start backing
right.
in. Because then all of a sudden you're opening your door, you're opening windows, you get somebody, hey, am I straight? Wipe those down. You got something in your truck, old shirt, towel or whatever, do that. The other one that you reminded me, because you said you had a motor that was kind of grumpy in the mornings. I had one that every time I had to pump it, I had to reach right. back there and pump the gas into the yep. motor before it would start. And the last thing you want to do is you get down there and all of a sudden you got to start pumping the gas. I mean, you just want to be efficient and courteous and just have a – everybody has a better day, when you're doing that.
Same thing when you're coming back in.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, boom, get it done. Get out of the way.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Don't stop at the dock. I've seen it so many times. People back down the – backing down or pull their truck up there and start gathering their stuff that's in their boat and moving it to their truck while their boat's still in the water, not on the trailer.
That's the worst.
It's like, guys, your truck is going to have your boat.
And especially there's a line.
Now you can pull it on up there and you can take your time and
mm-hmm.
do what you need to do, but get out of the way.
Yeah, I've seen them on the ramp. All of a sudden, they want to show off their fish or something, and they're passing them to their buddy in the back of the truck. I'm like, dude, we get it.
You see that a lot. And watch different ramps and different bait camps and different things. They all have their own little personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys that use them on a regular basis know that, like at Charlie's, we're all going to swing around to the right. and we're going to make the little loop, and we're going to line up over there.
Yeah.
That's how we do it. Every ramp's got a different thing.
And then there's
somebody. And then it happened to me just last week. These two young guys just come swinging around there when it's my turn, and they,
like, hey.
They came around from the other side and just swung in and backed up and started backing down to the boat, backing their boat down in the waters. Everybody in the whole line's looking like, what are you doing? And then they got the tires wet and then decided, oh, we forgot about the plug. And they pulled up a little bit, got out, checked the plug, and they backed it down a little bit further, but not all the way in where the boat would come off. Mm-hmm. And then they started loading their wading gear and stuff and throwing it into the boat, and then got their rods and reels out. I mean, it was the classic. That's why I brought it up to you, because they were the classic don't do this.
You ruin it for everybody.
Yeah, everybody
and,
in line
and everybody wants to have a good day.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing, and I felt guilty of this the first time I was fishing. I shouldn't say the first time, but one of the first times I pulled my boat down to Rockport, and I did everything, you know, fine, and got the boat out, loaded, tied off, everything. But then I went and parked my trailer, and it wasn't in the spot where they usually park trailers.
Yeah,
you know, cause I was just, it was a new ramp. I think I was going to it was somewhere near I forget, but in Copano Bay,
Goose Island.
Yeah, and so there's like this middle area where everybody parks their trailers in the same direction. Well, I'm the idiot that hadn't been there forever. So I pull all the way up to the edge, thinking you got to pull up, because that's where I usually park, right up on the edge of the parking lot, not in the middle of the parking lot.
Yeah.
But they park in the middle so people can drive around.
That's the way Charlie's is.
Yeah.
We park
I parked on the edge. I got back. I had three notes on my windshield wiper. Hey, bleep hole. I'm like, and I like, first of all, I was like, hey, I was kind of mad. Yeah. Like, what are these guys got some nerve? And then I realized, oh,
yeah,
everybody else is over there.
Yep. If you're not from around here, you might want to just look around and see what everybody else is doing.
Okay. I did it wrong. My bad, guys. We'll see you next week.
And it's not the locals own it.
It's just, it's the...
It's the way things are done in that area.
Well, and it's efficient.
Yeah, you kind of watch what everybody else is doing.
To my defense, I was the first one in.
Well, if you were the first one in, you had no way of knowing.
I didn't. I'm going to stick to that story. All right, so speaking of boat etiquette, there's also nasty weather. We had last week, we had a good front come through. Hopefully, everybody caught some fish on the weekend. Now we're here in Thanksgiving week. It turns, and it turns fast this time of year. Recently I was out on the water and it was dead flat. I think I told you about it, just dead flat. Mm-hmm. Gorgeous. I'm like, all right, here we go. Less than an hour in, I mean, all of a sudden I see a little storm on the horizon that wasn't supposed to be there according to my radar, but it did because the weather backed up off of the bay, which it tends to do this time of year. Wind started kicking up. I'm like, all right, well, I'm just going to bag it for now and we'll worry about it later. But a lot of guys, you know, and we're all guilty. We want to stay out there. A lot of times, man, when you stay out there, then you're going to be dealing with 3-4 foot waves. And you got to know what you're doing. I want to get your expertise on this. My thoughts are basically, I always go back to the same thing. It's just gas. It's just gasoline. Right. You know, that's my theory. If I see some weather, if I'm going to get people wet or really, really beat up, go in one direction. But if I go around the other way, find a leeward shoreline.
Have a plan.
Yeah, if you find a leeward shoreline, yeah. Maybe something protected, you can go a little slower. It's just gasoline. You can buy gasoline. And that's kind of my theory.
I will not beat my boat up.
Yeah.
To go do something like that. I just don't want to deal with it.
It sounds awful. Yeah. It's scary.
It hurts.
It hurts. I got a bad back.
Yeah. I mean, luckily, my new boat, you know, that new Cat, it can handle that rough water pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new boat. I'm an old guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's I don't handle it as well as I used to.
Right.
But there's a whole lot of boat captains out there with foot problems and back problems.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why.
Yeah,
pounding across a bay, it does a number on you.
It really does. And again, you know, you want to have fun. I go back to that, but safety is number one. And if you don't know how to angle into a wave, I mean, it gets bad. I've seen it. I've seen it seen it happen in real time.
Yep.
It gets bad if you don't know how to. You know, generally, you know, you can 45 a wave to a certain, you know, height. But you got to have the experience and, okay, that's a little bit too much. I got to go back the other direction and just loop around, whatever it may be, you know.
But you know, I still run a small poling skiff.
Mm-hmm.
And with that skiff, you better know what the weather's going to do throughout the day. We've got enough good forecast now. You can generally tell pretty close what mm-hmm. it's going to be. And I schedule my days based on right. what the weather's going to be. You know, if I know it's going to be really windy, I'm going to go down and launch in Port O'Connor where I can run some little back channels. Mm-hmm. And I can cut in and out, and I've got protection. If it's going to be calm, I'm going to launch down there at Charlie's and I'll run across.
Right.
Run straight across.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've passed that hero stage a mm-hmm. long time ago where, hey, man, I know it's going to be rough, but
here I go.
We can make it.
Yeah, here I go.
And when you have to tell yourself, well, hey, we can make it, you're convincing yourself that you can make it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, maybe you probably shouldn't be doing that.
I totally agree. And the other point I wanted to make on this, I'm sure there's some exceptions, but I can't think of one offhand. Pretty much every bay system that listens to us from, you know, lower coast to middle coast to upper coast, there's a ramp that's going to be on the good side of the wind.
Most of the places.
Most yeah. bay yeah. systems all the way down, up and down the coast. Like if you're in Galveston and it's a north wind, you can find a place where you can launch, oh, yeah. you know, on that side. If it's a strong west wind, you can find a place to launch. You know, use what we have available. Don't go hell or high water. I'm launching right here.
Yeah.
You know, because then you're asking for trouble.
Yeah. You see that on kayak guys a lot too. You know, they've got a spot in their mind mm-hmm. that they have to go fish right now.
Mm-mm-mm.
And, you know, we had to deal a few years back. Young guy was that way in the kayaks, and dadgum near got a couple people killed.
Yeah.
Because they had to go fish this one area.
Mm-mm, you don't have
and
to.
And the weather wasn't right for it.
Yeah.
If the weather's not right for it, don't do it.
Go to another ramp that's
protected. Somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree. All right, let's get into some fishing discussion here. Thanksgiving weekend. I mentioned at the top of the podcast, one of my all-time favorite memories, one all-time great days was the day after Thanksgiving. Wife's family came in, or our family, but, you know, her side of the family came in, and we had a great Thanksgiving, and I'm tired and beat, and I said, I'm getting up, and I'm going fishing, and just killed it on the day after Thanksgiving. So hopefully a lot of people are going to do that. There are fronts. We've experienced some fronts mm-hmm. here. How long after a front for you, or is there a timetable?
No, depends on the front. Mm-hmm. Depends on how strong it is. Depends on which direction the wind's going to blow in that front.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've talked about many times, the northwest wind's going to dump water. I'll be out there in the middle of that.
Mm-hmm.
Count me in. Yeah, you talk about picking the right ramp. I know what ramp I need to be at.
Yep.
And I know what route I can run. And I could get, when I was guiding in Galveston, I could get to my fishing area that I wanted to be at. 30, 35 mile an hour wind was not a big deal in that little poling skiff.
Well, it's a big deal, but
I mean, it really wasn't.
Not for you.
I could get there and I could fish safely
uh-huh.
and I could get back.
Yeah, that's all you need.
But man, I could wear them out while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Thanksgiving, I was 5 or 6 years ago, I had a couple of guys, father and son, come from Utah, and they wanted to catch a redfish on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
I had never done it before, never even saltwater fished. I get down there, and the wind's blowing like hell. It's mist and rain. It's fixing to rain a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
and the worst of it's passed. You know, that initial part of the front's passed, but the wind's not going to die. You know, you stand
yeah,
there.
It's going to be there.
You're standing there, and the flags are popping. I already had my boat in the water.
Mm-hmm.
By the time they got there, and they come walking down there to the ramp, and they hemmed and hawed around a little bit, and they said, well, I don't think this weather's going to let us do this. And I said, it's not bad. I mean, we can make it over there safely, and you can tell he's looking at me like, oh, this guy just wants to take my money. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are guides who will tell you
right,
that.
Yeah.
They'll blow smoke up your skirt and tell mm-hmm. you, that, hey, it's going to be great today, when they know it's not.
Yeah.
But I don't do that. Yeah, if I think it's going to be good, it's – you know, I'll
it's
tell you,
good.
If I think yeah. we probably shouldn't go, I'll take the hit.
Right.
You know? I'd rather do that and have you come back. But these guys, I told them, I said, man, it's a dump day.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all aren't familiar with anything down here, but it's a dump day. Everything in that marsh is getting dumped out right now.
Yeah.
And it's going to be on. It's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Could be the best fishing day of your life. And they hemmed and hawed around about it, and they thought about it some more. And I was still gathering my stuff, you know, putting things in the boat. They came back and said, ah, we're done. We're just going to do family stuff today. I think it was Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Now, we're just going to do family stuff, and we'll find something to do.
Mm-hmm.
You want us to help you get your boat out? I said, nope. He goes, what do you – I guess you do it enough, you can get it in and out by yourself. I said, yeah, I can. I said, but I'm going fishing. They stopped, and they looked at each other, and they said, well, you're going to go out in this mess even though you don't have paying customers?
Mm-hmm.
I said, yes, sir. I'm headed out right now. As soon as y'all – before y'all leave the parking lot, I'm going to be running down the canal. And he says, well, hell, let's just try it. We're here.
Yeah.
And we went out, and honestly, they lost count. I don't ever keep count of fish. Yeah. But the father was at the front of it. And usually fly fishing, I keep one guy fly fishing up front, and the other's waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And then they switch when they catch fish.
No.
I had set up in a drain, and we had so many redfish coming out of the back of the marsh that I set up sideways, blocked mm-hmm. the drain.
So they could both.
And had one on the front, one on the back. I put the power pole down. I nosed up into the grass mm-hmm. on one side.
Well, perfect.
Put the power pole down and held sideways. Mm-hmm. Had one on the bow, one on the back. And both of them were catching fish the entire time out of schools, mm-hmm. schools that were coming. And father says, how many fish do we think you think we caught? And I said, hell, I don't know. It's a bunch. And he says, well, I know I've caught 40.
Good
he said,
Lord.
I've kept count of mine. He said, I know I caught 40 at least, and I've kind of lost track,
mm-hmm.
and my son's been whooping my butt.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we've got to have close to 100 fish, and we still fished for another hour and a half, 2 hours after that, and still caught more fish. I know for a fact.
All redfish?
All redfish.
That's great.
A couple of
flounder. They were gassed.
A couple of flounder, but it was all redfish, and it was just one after another. Mm-hmm. It was doubles the whole time, and at the end of it, they just had grinning ear to ear.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, man, we can't wait. Man, we'll come back next year. I said, don't count on this again.
It ain't going to happen all the time.
That was a once-in-a-lifetime kind of deal right there. But I'd had
but
a bunch
you got
of,
customers for life.
Yeah, I'd had a bunch of schools in the back end of the marsh. Mm-hmm. I knew where these large, large schools of several mm-hmm. hundred fish in each school.
Yeah.
I had 9 or 10 different schools back there, and there was only one way out of the marsh.
Yeah.
And they all had to leave.
Yeah. That's awesome. That is so awesome. But those are the stories are the, that we like.
Those are the days, yeah, mm-hmm. you can fish on a front.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then there's others, you know, a northeast front blowing that cold and nasty and wrong direction. Mm-hmm. Water's not dumping. Water's not doing anything. I'm going to skip those days.
Right. Well, that the reason this came up is we were talking. I got a question, I should say, a message, you know, hey, I think I should fish one day after the front, or is it 2 days after the front, or is it during the front? And you just answered it. It really varies. I didn't have an answer.
It can be, and there's some great feeding that head right before the front.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it goes off
mm-hmm.
at times. And then I've been out there, you know, thinking, oh, man, it's prefrontal. Everything's good. You know, I like this. I'm going to get out. And it's
nothing. Nothing.
Yeah. I don't know. It could be a million different little factors.
It's kind of like, you know, if there's a good cold front like we had last week, I would get out there. Whether it's during 1 day or 2 days, if you can do it, there's going to be you're gonna know, because the bait's going to be moving. You're going to see the fish moving, et cetera. So get out there. There's no real true answer other than that. Before we go, I want to talk about surf fishing. Because this was another a point that I saw, I forget, another message I got or something, which, by the way, you can do at Lopez on Sports on Twitter, Lopez on Sports on Instagram. You can reach us both on Facebook. All right. Is there a strategy on surf fishing? And it made me think, I mean, I can't remember the number of days I was fishing with my dad. He loved to surf fish. I loved to surf fish when the weather was right. And we just kind of stop and find a place and start fishing. Sometimes we catch fish. Sometimes we didn't. Sometimes we got skunked. There are a few things to look for other than the obvious bait. There are slicks on the surf as well. You'll see bait. One thing that I've found, and again, you may think I'm just crazy for this, excuse me, is when you're driving down the surf, okay, and we know about the guts, you know, et cetera. But when you're driving down the surf, let's say you're just going in one direction on the surf, and you see like a bunch of seaweed or debris that has been washed up on the surf in a line. Like in other words, you know, there's maybe a log and some seaweed and something that's washed up on the surf, and it's clear on both sides of that except for that one spot. there's water somehow running or something running up. That's right. That stuff is going there.
There's something that's changed the current. Right,
that's there. The current is going to that spot on the surf. And over the years, we learned to try those a little bit. And you'd be surprised that there's a lot there. That would be a more likely place to catch some fish. Mm-hmm. Where look for the debris on the shoreline. Now in today's world, it's not as barren, you know, where we could drive for a mile. And the debris is not as pretty.
Not seaweed.
But you can still see, like, even just a couple of sticks, a log, some sort of somebody's, you know.
One section of the beach has got more shell on it than another.
Yeah.
That shell indicates live bottom.
Yeah.
And that area is going to be a little better.
Mm-hmm. So drive up and down and don't just stop. You can. I mean, it's surf fishing. It's fun. You can catch fish. But there are, that's one thing. And also old, whether it's an old pier, I know in Surfside, we used to go down there a lot. There's some old piers and stumps and stuff that are sticking up. That's always a good spot to try. Well,
the current goes parallel to the coast, you know, on the beachfront. Anybody's been out on the beach and swimming and look up and you're 200 yards down from your car and you thought you were standing still. There's current on the beachfront all the time, one way or the other. Anything that's out there that can break that current up is where bait fish is going to tend to gather, and with bait fish, you're going to have predators. What you were talking about with things washing up on the beach, there's bars out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's first, second, and third bar, and the first, second, third gut. And then there's others beyond that even, but they're not as noticeable from the beach. That's where you see the waves break. The waves break on top of the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Watch how the waves are breaking. If you see an area of the beach where there's not waves breaking, all that water that's coming to the beach on those waves has got to go back out.
Mm-hmm.
That's where those little rip currents
going back out.
And there'll be a cut through the sandbar at that point.
Yeah.
It may not be super deep, but it's just enough of a cut to let the water back out.
It's not as violent. You know, right. the waves.
Watch the waves. If the wave isn't curling over and breaking in a 3 or 4 foot section, or maybe a 10, 20 foot section, depending on what beach you're on and how big the waves are, that little section right there is water going back out.
Right.
That's current that's pulling back.
Mm-hmm.
Fish along the edges of it. Those are the spots that in pinch points, when you see two guts run together or two bars run together and they pinch.
Right.
You know, they pinch that gut down to a smaller area.
Mm-hmm.
Fish that. Anything that looks different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're looking at the beachfront, it's just all straight line sand, and then there's a gut, and then there's sand, and then there's a gut, and it's all straight, and there's nothing really to it. I mean, really maybe you
see bait or something, sure, but if not.
Watch slicks or bait or anything like that. But if you're not seeing the signs that you want to see, and you're just going to blind cast around, look for something that's interesting.
Right. Yeah.
Something different.
Whether, like I said, it's debris or something that's rolled up there or what you're talking about, you know, and I'd forgotten about that. That's a good point because it almost looks like flatter, you know, than where the waves are. But it's good. So, all right, well, what are we talking about this weekend before we let people go? Holiday weekend. Obviously, the weather, we're not quite sure yet on. We had the good cold front last week. What's our plan this weekend?
If I was up on the upper coast somewhere, middle coast to upper coast, I'd be looking at flounder.
Mm-hmm. Bigger ones are coming.
Making that big serious flounder run right now. I've always looked at Thanksgiving as the time when I started looking for flounder.
Mm-hmm.
The big females should be pushing towards the passes a little bit. That cold weather doesn't hurt, and that's probably the direction I would go, you know, for a fun fishing trip. For you got family in for Thanksgiving, flounder fishing's easy. You can get people on flounder, and the more people you take, you know, the limit's only two this month.
Yeah, November.
You know, go ahead and bring a few extra people so you
can get six or eight.
You can have a few of them.
Yeah, debone that sucker.
Yeah, the big trout. You know, that is. As soon as we get cold, you know, the big trout
could
start
be real
rolling,
good, real
get
soon,
real good.
Yeah,
the water's clearing up. The cooler water holds less suspended material in it, so it clears up a little bit. And the cooler it gets, clearer that gets, better my sight casting gets.
And for trout, you may want to find some of the darker water.
You want to find a little off color.
All the sediment that's causing it to get a little darker makes it warmer too. So the trout will be kind of around hovering in that area, I think. Anyway,
that old thing about you got to fish soft mud, you know, deep soft mud in the wintertime, it works to a degree. It can work, mm-hmm. but that's not the only place those big trout are.
Mm-mm. Look at the color changes, sediment in the water, and then there's clear water. That'll be some good spots. And I said it 2 weeks ago in episode 9. I'm an advocate of don't slow it down to a crawl when you're doing. Don't worry about that.
I don't
that.
Believe in that.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Work it like you're going to work it.
If it's warm enough for them to be eaten, you can't take it away from them.
Yeah.
You slowing it down tempts them a little more maybe, mm-hmm. but that whole, you know, twitch it and
sit
the
it.
Deal is, you know, twitch it, smoke a cigarette, and then twitch it again. You know, that I don't believe it.
Yeah, I don't buy it either. All right, man. Well, have a great Thanksgiving holiday, and episode 12 is going to be next week, and plenty more to cover there. And we're so glad you guys are listening. Reach out to us. And he is Captain Scott Nolan. Book a trip with him, man. It's worth your time. You just heard one great story. You can be part of one yourself. CaptainScottNoll.com, Facebook, Captain Scott Noll.
Right. On the Texas Saltwater Fishing Magazine. You might find yourself on a cover
or in the
magazine. I've had a lot of customers end up on the cover.
Well, that's pretty sweet. And the great tarpon pictures that you've taken. I've tweeted a couple of those out as well. Not tarpon season now, but
no, that cold front did the tarpon in.
Yeah, they're hitting Mexico or Florida somewhere.
They're warmer.
Yeah. All right, well, have a great holiday, and you guys go catch some fish. I'm gonna go out this weekend as soon as I get rid of my family. Did I say that? I did. We'll see you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.